POW is a prisoner of war. It is a person who has been captured by the enemy, who is held hostage in the context of a conflict. It is where the opposition or the enemy now controls the movements, the actions, the reactions of the person who has been captured. Many Christians are POWs, prisoners of spiritual warfare. They have been captured by the enemy, and there appears to be no way of escape. They feel trapped by situations and circumstances that the world calls addictions. Whether it's drugs, sex, pornography, alcohol, codependency, gambling, food, or what have you, they feel trapped. And there seems to be no way out. They find themselves in a sort of quicksand where the harder they try to get out, the deeper they sink in. And there is this feeling of being cursed, or if I were to use another word, this doom or gloom that hovers over them. So today in our series, Reversing the Curses, I want to talk about reversing the addiction curse. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses." The word fortress was used of a walled area or a fortified place that a person couldn't escape from. In biblical days, a prison was called a fortress. A tomb was called a fortress, where a person was trapped, locked up, or contained with no visible means of escape. We're told in verse 4 that fortresses must be destroyed. Now, a biblical word for a fortress, the secular world calls it an addiction, is the word stronghold. That's the spiritual synonym for the worldly world of addiction, because somebody is trapped with something they can't overcome. What then is a fortress, an addiction, or to use the spiritual terminology, a stronghold? It is a negative pattern of thought which has been burned into our minds, creating as a mindset a situation as unchangeable, even though it is against the will of God. A fortress, addiction, a stronghold, is a pattern of thinking that has been burned into our minds that accepts a situation as unchangeable and unfixable, even though our conclusion about it goes against the will of God. It is the feeling of hopelessness that you have regarding the stronghold that you or someone you know happens to be trapped in. You can hear a person describe their stronghold because they will always say something like, "I can't help it. I can't stop it. I can't change it. I can't fix it." What they're saying is, it's got me, I don't have it. And when that stronghold really becomes prolific in the life of the individual, and I'm talking about Christians here specifically, then what happens is that they begin to identify their personhood by the stronghold. They will say, "Well, I am an alcoholic. I am a homosexual. I am a compulsive gambler." That's the thing has become so strong that now they don't know how to talk about themselves without describing themselves as that thing. They begin to believe what they say they are. In the Bible, a stronghold is more than gambling. It is the spirit of gambling. It is more than pornography. It is the spirit of immorality. It is a spiritual reality that is infusing this burning process upon you. And that is why if you are not able to address the spiritual cause, you're not really fully addressing its manifestation in the life. So a stronghold is a pattern that has been burned into your thinking so that you view as unchangeable a situation. And you know you're in it because there is hopelessness about it. Now, if we're going to cure it, whatever it is for you or me or us or others, then we need to understand the cause of it. If we're going to cure it, then we've got to understand the cause of it. And perhaps what I share with you today about reversing the addiction or stronghold curse, you will be able to utilize with someone in your family or some friend who's been trapped. They've gone to 12-step everything and have found no release from their situation. Well, let's look at the cause. He tells us in verse 5, we are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God and are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. At the end of verse 4, he says we must destroy fortresses or strongholds. Beginning of verse 5, he says destroy again. But then he says, what you must destroy is not the thing itself. He says, what you must destroy are speculations, knowledge, and thoughts. In other words, the problem is not in the habit. The problem is in the mind. The habit is the expression of the thinking. To fix the habit, you've got to fix the thought. So simply telling a person you should not do that is not enough. Because unless they've changed their thinking about the it that is controlling them, the it will keep controlling them. He says what you must destroy if you want to get rid of the fortress are the speculations, knowledge, and thought patterns that are the spiritual impetus behind the fortress being built in the first place. And all of those things, speculation, knowledge, and thoughts, arrive in the mind or the thinking. How does it get there? He tells you here in a very picturesque word that can change our lives. He says in verse 5, we are destroying speculations and every lofty thing. There it is. The cause of fortresses or strongholds is a lofty thing. Now, the question is, what is a lofty thing? Well, let me give you a synonym for the word lofty thing. A synonym for the biblical word lofty thing is the word partition. Partition. A lofty thing was a partition that had been lifted up. He says, if you're going to overcome the fortress, stronghold, or to use the popular word addiction, you must get rid of the partition in the mind. When a person is controlled by an addiction, stronghold, or fortress, it is because a partition has been raised up in their thinking. As long as that partition is up, the fortress will stand. But when the partition is dismantled, the fortress loses its authority. So rather than getting rid of the habit, we got to get rid of the partition. The question is, well, what's the partition? Well, in a number of our rooms in our sanctuary, the classrooms that are in our sanctuary, they are the size of two rooms, but there is a partition that can be brought down in the middle. So the one room can be made into two rooms because we can slide a lofty thing, a partition, this high rise, a separation down the middle of the room, blocking the one room from being one room, but turning the one room into two rooms. There's only one reason we do that. We do that to decrease the possibility that the information being given on one side passes through to the people sitting on the other side. In other words, we pull a partition because we don't want a disturbance. We don't want the group meeting over here to infiltrate the group meeting over there. We want them to be two separate meetings with two. See, if it was one meeting, we wouldn't need a partition. We only need a partition because there's a double meeting going on, and we don't want the information flow to be free. We want to block the information. The way Satan creates a fortress, stronghold, or addiction is by creating in the mind a lofty thing that is a partition. What is the partition designed to do? It is designed to block the flow of the knowledge of God from entering into the thinking of the saint who is living in the fortress. It wants to block out the free flow of spiritual truth crossing over into the thinking of the person in the fortress, so that the person in the fortress, stronghold, or addiction feels like they are trapped. They're on this side of the room. There's a partition. The information can't go forward, but they're on this side trying to fix the problem. But the information they need is being blocked so that it will not pass through. So that's why there is no victory to be had. Satan must erect a lofty thing. Many of you on your televisions have PIP, picture in picture. That means that you can be looking at your show and you can bring up in the corner of the screen another channel. And you can be watching a movie and looking at a football game. You can have a picture in picture. So you're watching a movie, you listen to the movie, but you want to catch whatever's happening in the game or the basketball game or the tennis match. And so up on the side, there is a picture in picture. Usually the picture in picture is not the main show. The main show is on most of the screen. The picture in picture is simply another show that you want to glance at while you're watching the main show on the television. For many of us here this morning, you have come to church this morning for a picture in picture. You're going to come and you're going to hear spiritual information, spiritual truth, spiritual songs, but it's not the main show. And when you leave here today, you're going to go to the main show. You're going to go back to work and family and the life and day-to-day struggles, day-to-day. And you will have spent your 2 hours, you will have had on the screen a look at spiritual things, but the spiritual things won't control the show. And so you'll wonder why there was no carryover to the main screen. And the reason why there was no carryover is because of a lofty thing. That is a partition in the mind that blocks the flow of the truth taking root in the life. Now, how does he do this? How does Satan do this? Well, the first thing he does is he shares his thoughts with you. He shares his thought. Remember what he did with Eve? He came to Eve and he said, "Hath God said?" The first conversation between a human being and the devil was about God. "Hath God said?" He raised the question, had a discussion, and by the end of verse 6 of Genesis 3, she was believing his story. You know, when you burn a CD, what you do is you take the music or the movie and you pass it on so that on the other disc, it has precisely what was on the original disc being burned into it, so the copy is precisely the content of the original. What Satan does is burn into our thinking his thoughts so that we think his thoughts after him until they're burned so deeply, they become our thoughts. So his thinking, which starts as a suggestion, turns into a way of thinking, which turns into a way of operating, because he has burned his thinking into us, creating the actions that result from the thought. Like a computer, he creates a floppy. And it is to repeat over and over again until you view a situation as unchangeable, irreversible, and unfixable. Now, the Bible has a word for this partition. James 1 calls it double-mindedness. Petition. Remember, you got two rooms now, not one, double. But it's not just double anything, it's double mind. So speculations, knowledge, thoughts. There is a partition in the mind that produces a double mind. Two ways of thinking. See, the problem among Christians, most Christians, is not that they reject the divine way. It's just that's not the only way. There is another way. So they have two ways of thinking because they've got a partition. You hear it in the phrase secular and sacred. That's a partition. Man's way, God's way. That's a partition. God says, but I think. That's a partition. A partition is simply having two views of the same subject. It is a Berlin Wall. Remember when the Berlin Wall was up, the East couldn't go west, the West couldn't go east. The two could never work it out because there was a lofty thing, a wall, a partition that divided the same group of people, Germans. East from west, so there could never be unification and flow. The people in the east were trapped. They couldn't go west. People in the west were trapped. They couldn't get to their families back in the east. And you know the reason why? Because there was a lofty thing, a wall that had been erected. It's double-mindedness. What is double-mindedness? Simply, double-mindedness is having a human view and divine view, both operating in the same mind. Man's way, God's way. You got both of them. And they're trying to work it out. Once you create a double mind, the Bible says in James chapter 1, let not that man think he will receive anything from the Lord. Once you create a two-tiered view, you build a lofty thing, a partition of the mind. There can be no victory to the trap that you're in. Because God will never cooperate with a view that compromises him. Never, ever, ever. So that means you are now left to your own resources to fix your problem. The worst thing that a person in Alcoholics Anonymous does is the first thing they ask you to do. The very worst thing is the first thing. If you go to a 12-step program, the very first thing they will tell you in Alcoholics Anonymous is state your name. Hello, I'm Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. That's the first thing you do. The Bible would disagree with that. The Bible would say, that's not who you are. If you're a Christian, now that may be what you're doing, but that's not who you are. You are a blood-bought, totally forgiven, child of the living God. That's who you are. Now, I know you're not functioning like who you are, but that's because you've not learned to think in light of who you are. I watched a very interesting movie. Some of you may have seen it, and it was The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Anybody seen that movie? The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting movie. If you get a chance to see it, this demon-possessed person, and they're trying to get rid of this demon. Okay, this demon is, the spirit is controlling this person, and they're trying to get rid of the demon. And so they're trying everything to get rid of this demon. But they've got to control the girl from having these, you know, these violent episodes while they're trying to get rid of the demon. So what they give the girl is a medication called Gamatrol. And they give her this Gamatrol, and when they give her the Gamatrol, what they said was, the problem is, when we give her this medication, it blocks the ability for us to get, it makes her calm down, but it blocks the ability to us to get to the deeper root, because the medication kind of creates a different mindset so that she is not able to fully function on the exorcism that she ultimately needs. See, a lot of people settle for stuff that makes them feel better, but doesn't get to the root of the issue that's spiritual that you got to get to if you're trying to solve the problem long term. So they settle for short term solutions by creating a double mind, two ways of thinking. Paul says in verse 3, we walk in the flesh, but we don't war according to the flesh. In other words, we live in our human bodies, but that's not how we do battle. That's not how we get victory. That's not how we get deliverance from fortresses. We don't get it that way. We don't get it by the flesh. The opposite from the flesh in the Bible is the spirit. You can't mix the two. And the problem is today, fortresses exist because of illegitimate mixtures. There's been a faulty mixture. Faulty mixture in marriages, a faulty mixture in finances, a faulty mixture in desires, there's been a faulty mixture. And because there's this faulty mixture, there's this partition. And the partition blocks the flow of God's victory, freedom, and deliverance from the fortress that holds you hostage. Peter ran into this in Matthew 16. Jesus was telling his disciples he had to go to Jerusalem, he had to die. And Peter said, God forbid. God forbid that you would go to Jerusalem and die. He says, no, we can't have that. Guess what Jesus said? Get thee behind me, Satan. He didn't say, Peter, you wrong. He said, you thinking like the devil. In fact, he says, get thee behind me, Satan. He says, because your concern is not the concern of God. Your concern is the concern of man. But he says, get thee behind me, Satan, because he knew that that comment, which was well-intentioned, by the way, don't go to Jerusalem and die. I don't want you to die. That was a great intention, but it was not in keeping with the will of God, but it was the way he was thinking. And Jesus said, that's the devil talking through you. You ever said to a person, you know, you ain't nothing but the devil? You could be correct. Elijah asked in 1 Kings chapter 8, how long will you halt between two opinions? How long will you operate with this divided mind? Everybody this morning is probably right now fully Christian. Fully biblical, fully spiritually oriented. You are 100% right now in the spirit realm. But when you leave here and go back to the other side of the room, a partition will go up. And you will say, well, that was Sunday, that was church, that was religion. Now let me go to the real world. Once you lift up that partition, you have blocked the Spirit's ability to fix whatever is wrong. Once you lift that up, it blocks it. Because that man cannot think he will receive anything from the Lord. So, now that we know the cause, what's the cure for this curse of addiction strongholds? What begins to change it? Please notice at the end of verse 4, he says, well, let me read verse 4 again. For the weapons of our warfare, the tools we use, are not of the flesh, that is, humanly oriented or conceived, but divinely, God, powerful for the destruction of fortresses. So the first thing we want you to know is fortresses must be destroyed, not remodeled. They must be dismantled. In other words, the partition in the room must be removed. You can't, don't see, because if you keep the partition in the room, you're going to be tempted to use it. You're going to be tempted to pull that thing out again. He says, no, the partition must be destroyed. And in the process of destroying the partition, we must destroy, verse 5, speculations, every lofty thing raised up against knowledge of Christ. And we are taking every thought captive, thought, thinking, mind, captive to the obedience to Christ. Now, let me tell you a secret. If you're told you have skin cancer, skin lotion is not your solution. Now, it may seem like a solution because it got skin on it. But skin lotion is not your solution to skin cancer because it doesn't have the potency to address the problem. If you have a brain tumor, taking 2 aspirin and lying down, that's not your solution because it does not have the power to address the problem. It's obvious whatever solution you've been trying is not the solution because it hasn't solved anything. So maybe the problem is a partition. Now, let me tell you how the devil has to work this. This will help us to understand why there's got to be the destroying of fortresses. The devil has a kingdom. It's called the kingdom of darkness because that is the only place where he can function. In other words, he cannot function in this kingdom called light. He cannot, because that is foreign to his nature. So for him to control you and to control me, guess what he's got to do? He's got to drag us to his kingdom. See, he can't come over on this side and make it work. So he's got to get us on his side. And how does he do that? Well, the Bible says he's a liar and the father of lies. He's got to instill a non-truth within you, but make you think it's the truth. So he functions, the Bible says, as an angel of light. But he functions as an angel of light, making him look like the real thing, only to get you to operate in the realm of darkness. And so that is how he tries to control us. There is only one thing that can beat a lie, and that's the truth. There is only one thing that can beat a lie, and that's the truth. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you up. Now, what that means is, if you're not free and I'm not free, either we don't know the truth or are not utilizing the truth that we know. Or God is a liar. So if God is not a liar, because by 2 immutable things it is impossible for God to lie, that means that a fortress or a stronghold for which is holding us hostage, which means we're not free, is either we don't know the truth or we're not utilizing the truth that we know. Let's try to illustrate it this way. A great biblical illustration. Great biblical illustration. In Joshua chapter 6, the walls of Jericho come tumbling down. It's a fortress. It's a walled city. It's a stronghold. It is a stronghold that Israel is too weak to capture. They can't capture it because everybody's protected in the walls. If they storm the walls, they're going to die. The question is, how do we take down this stronghold, this fortress called Jericho? God comes up with an incredible idea that sounds, on the face of it, dumb. He tells them, here's what I want you to do. I want you to walk around the city once a day for 6 days. Then I want you on the seventh day to walk around it 7 times, the number of completion. Put the Ark of the Covenant out front. Put the priest out front. And all, that's all I want you to do. Say what? What kind of military strategy is that? That sounds like somebody who doesn't know how to fight. Coming up with an idea like that. That doesn't make sense. Joshua, who's the military leader, now has a choice. Since what God just said doesn't make sense, let us lean to our own understanding of how to fight. Because what God just said is crazy. You know, nobody fights by walking around a wall exposed to the enemy like that. They all know we're here. There's no surprise attack. Nobody fights like that. So since God obviously doesn't know what he's doing, let's lean to our own understanding. Or, as Joshua said, God is God. It doesn't make sense, but let's do it God's way and let's see what happens. Now, you got all the soldiers walking around Jericho. Okay? Can you imagine if you are a citizen in Jericho or part of the government of Jericho or part of the military of Jericho looking out at these fools? Because that's what they had to be thinking. These folk are crazy. These folk are crazy. They walking around a wall. They had to look stupid. Now you laugh, but I'm getting ready to come down with something. Okay? When you pull out the petition and the knowledge of God has free flow, you're going to look stupid too. Because you are not going to make sense to people. Because many of the things God will request or require you to do will not be what you think is right, will not make sense, will not be what you would prefer. It certainly wouldn't be what your friends would do. But God is saying, what you going to do? Are you going to lean to your own understanding or are you going to let my information flow? Please notice something. Verse 6. And we are ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is complete. Somebody didn't read that. Let me read it again. And we are ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is complete. What do you think the word is that I want to zero in on? Complete. See, the reason why the fortresses still stand is because we're doing some of what God said. The destruction does not occur. The victory is not achieved until the obedience has been completed. You can't do one third of it. You can't do two thirds of it. You can't do nine tenths of it. You must complete the instruction before the supernatural is engaged. When they walked around once on the first day, ain't nothing happened to those walls. When they walked around on the second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, walls still standing. They still look like fools. They walk around once on the seventh day, twice on the seventh day, three times on the seventh day, four times on the seventh day, five times on the seventh, six times on the seventh day. Nothing's happening because they weren't finished. Remember, seven is the number of completion. You must finish it. When they walked around the seventh time, he said, now I want you to let out a shout. And the people began to shout in praise. And when the people began to shout in praise, cracks were walking all through the walls and the bricks began to shake. And all of a sudden, the fortress that had been there for years, that was strong and vibrant and looked like it was never going to change, came crumbling down because God's Spirit intervened when obedience was finished. Your obedience must be complete. You can't do a part of it. Part of the problem for most Christians is they say, well, I read my Bible, I study, I pray, I go to church, and nothing's better. What is unfinished? There's something unfinished. It's something unfinished whenever you're a hostage. There is a something that has not been complete in what God has asked us to do, causing us. You say, but I don't feel like this will work. Well, suppose the IRS man said, I don't feel like you pay taxes. No, I just don't feel it. I'm looking at your face. You don't look like a person that's paid taxes. I just don't feel you've done it. You're going to say, well, wait a minute. Here's my canceled check. At the point that you give the evidence, it's irrelevant how the opposition feels. Because you've now got legal record. See, oh, there's so much here. You have to understand, as a believer, if you are a Christian, you possess legal authority in the spiritual realm. But the moment you go to the human approach, you lose your authority. There's no power there. The devil loves to see you pull the petition because he knows the power of God won't flow that way. It won't go through it because God will not do that. He will not mix and match with you. Whenever there's somebody on drugs that I know and I can get them there, I send them up to a group in New Jersey. This is the most unique place. You come in with your drug problem. And they start off just the opposite. You are not a drug addict. If they're a Christian, you are not a drug addict. You are a blood-bought child of the living God who already has been given victory over drugs. That's who you are. Now, you know what they have to do now? Every time they run into somebody that day who's in this drug rehabilitation program, that's how they have to identify themselves. Not as a drug addict, but as a blood-bought child of God who already has victory over drugs. All of a sudden, after a week or two, they begin to believe that. You know why? Because they have thought it. The Bible calls it meditation. You know what meditation is? It's fantasizing. That's all. Meditation is fantasy, just dreaming it up over and over and over again in your mind. David said, I meditate on your word day and night. That's all it is, fantasizing. So he would just fantasize about his new state and his new state. And then they would memorize scripture and then have to quote scripture to each other. They have a 75% success rate for drug addicts within 6 months of the time that they come there, no matter how long they've been on drugs, and all they use is the Bible. That's all they use. Because they understand that the action is not the problem, it's the mind that's the problem. The action is simply the expression of the problem. But we don't do that. We don't meditate that way. We don't rehearse what God says. We spend all our time on the telephone rehearsing what people think. And we wonder why nothing's changing. Because there's no power in human thought when it comes to a stronghold, because a stronghold is spiritually based. I was trapped in an elevator. And that's an uncomfortable feeling in a high rise when you're trapped in an elevator. Because you're talking about a stronghold, a small space stronghold. Okay? The immediate reaction when this thing stopped between two floors, this is a number of years ago, but when it stopped between two floors was panic. Because we were trapped, stuck, couldn't get out. We were panicking. There were a couple reactions. Some people were crying, help, 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 help. Nobody hearing nothing. Nobody hearing a thing. Now, were they sincerely crying out? Yes. Were they begging for help? Yes. But it wasn't working. Other folk were banging on the door. Bam, 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 bam. Ain't nobody hearing that. But desperate people are going to do desperate things. And they were crying out. There was one calm man on the elevator. I simply walked to the other side, pulled out a latch, picked up the telephone, waited. A voice said, "Is there a problem?" I said, "We're trapped on the elevator between this floor and this floor. Can we get some help?" "We'll be right there." See, everybody forgot about the phone. Everybody forgot about the phone. And we were so into being trapped that we forgot there's a phone linked to the fire station or the security department, and merely by picking up the phone, we were released from our hostage. All the human effort we put forth, bam, 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 wouldn't work. The screaming, wouldn't work. But picking up the phone. You know why picking up the phone worked? Because there was a connection. See, it was linked to somebody who could come to the rescue. When you remove the partition and allow the knowledge of God to flow, there's a connection. And God will say, "Oh, you want my help, do you?" And you know the beauty of it? Once you get him on the line, you don't have to bang no more. You don't have to scream no more. In fact, a whisper will do. Because you've connected with the power that has the resource to deliver you from your trap situation.